Welcome to a podcast of Beyond the Book, a presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center. Copyright Clearance Center is the world's largest provider of copyright compliance solutions through a wide range of innovative licensing services and comprehensive educational programs for authors, publishers, and their audiences in academia, business, and research institutions. For more information about Beyond the Book and Copyright Clearance Center, please go to www.beyondthebook.com.
We're looking at the best and the worst and a special conference coming up in New York City today. Welcome, everyone, to Beyond the Book. My name is Chris Keneally, your host, and we'll be talking about the eBook Summit being brought to New York City December 15th and 16th by Media Bistro. And appropriately enough, we have on the line with us today Jason Bogue, who is editor of Media Bistro Publishing, where he curates publishing events and shapes their digital publishing curriculum. Jason, welcome to Beyond the Book.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited to talk to your audience.
Well, likewise, it's a pleasure to have you. We'll tell people briefly a bit about you. Apart from your work for the Media Bistro Publishing Wing, you're also the editor for the Gallicat blog there and host of a podcast yourself. So this is something you do on the other end of the microphone, if you will, their daily morning media menu, which I've listened to and enjoyed. Before joining Media Bistro, Jason was an investigative reporter at Judicial Reports and a blogger on publishing for No More Media. His work has also appeared in The Believer, Granta, Salon.com, The Revealer, and Peace Corps Writers. So, somebody who has come from the publishing and journalism side of things to one of the leading websites for authors of all sorts. And it must be exciting for you to be working there at Media Bistro.
Oh, it's such a cool spot to sit. I feel like I'm one of the luckiest people kind of in publishing. It's such a warm kind of community, and it's just cool to be here at this moment as publishing's changing and watching these people to help guide and also be part of the process of just figuring out what happens next. And no one really knows what's going to happen next, and it's fun to be able to talk to all these different people who have good ideas about what will happen next.
Well, I think that's very true, although it must be said, Media Bistro, it wasn't born yesterday, and in fact, because of its standing as one of the, you know, the very early innovators in the whole online news delivery system, you really, if it's coming from Media Bistro, I would say it's very much worth paying attention to.
Oh, absolutely, and I think I'm very fortunate to be here as well. You get a lot of the contacts that came with it. This blog was basically started by Ron Hogan, the senior editor now at Gallicat, and the work that he's done over the last few years has really laid the foundation. And when I came in, I guess it was a little over a year ago, I had some big shoes to fill, and I was kind of just taking the day-to-day responsibilities from him. He still posts, and the kind of community that he built and the contacts that he had established really, really helped maybe take my reporting to the next level.
Well, for people who might not be familiar, tell us briefly what kind of subjects you cover at Gallicat.
I cover everything, actually. Today, I've already posted about National Novel Writing Month, which is in a national contest every November to write a novel in 30 days. And so we cover that beat every November. We connect with those writers. I've also written about a publisher was offering 99-cent ebooks today. So I read about that. So I read about publishers, mainly publishing deals, any news that's happening within the publishing community. I'm kind of trying to be on top of that and cover that. But then we also have authors in the audience, people who are looking for advice. So today I interviewed one of the editors from Babbel.com, and I really gave him some pointed questions that would help freelance writers kind of shape their own work and maybe pitch parenting magazines and parenting publications and write books about parenting. And so try to have a hands-on approach for the writers in the audience and give them some practical advice for their careers.
Right, which is always useful. I mean, as a former freelance writer myself, I am a reformed freelancer. but I understand how valuable it is to know not what's happening today, but what's coming tomorrow and the following day. Because if you're on the outside looking in and trying to get in, you need to know what people are going to want, and not what they've already bought, but what they're going to buy next. And I think that's always very helpful. And we watch Gallicat regularly, and we will be linking to it from Beyond the Book. But let's talk about the ebook summit, which sounds very grand, very important. It's coming to New York City, December 15th and 16th. You're putting together this program? You're part of the program?
No, I did not do this alone at all. This is the work of many, many people here at Media Bistro. They have an events team that's kind of coordinated the whole space, arranged for the speakers. I helped pick or give suggestions for many of the people that would be on the list. But then the events team put it all together, and then the teaching side of Media Bistro is also very strong. They have a very strong, we offer classes and conferences about other topics in media as well. And so that whole team, they really came together to build the structure that you see here. So I've been brought in as a consultant many times, but they did so much work to kind of put this together for December 15th and 16th.
Well, we'll make sure they know that you've given them credit then, a modest man on top of everything else, Jason.
No.
But tell us about some of the highlights of the program for you. And indeed, I'm looking at the very start of things on Tuesday, and a couple of names we recognize here at Beyond the Book. The Art of Disruption, it says, thinking differently about the changes of publishing, and that's going to feature Jane Friedman, as well as Jeffrey Sharp, who we met and talked to at Book Expo a couple of years back. But what do you expect from that program?
Well, I've followed, they just started this brand new kind of digital book outfit called Open Road Integrated Media. That's going to kind of, we don't know too much about it yet, and I'm really excited to kind of find out more. They're supposed to unveil some new things and kind of show us the shape of this new project, but they've got a lot of venture capital that they've raised, and it's just great to see a new publishing outfit getting funding right now. It makes me really excited to see that. And so they're going to be working, I think, with kind of publishing digital books, new ones, but also kind of bringing back orphan works and things that have been out of print. I'm not exactly sure what their business model will be, but it's really exciting, and it looks like, Jane Friedman was the CEO, the former president of HarperCollins. She knows her stuff. She's been in this business for so long, and you kind of need someone with her connections and her kind of experience to bridge this gap between the new digital stuff where everyone's trying to figure out what to do next, and then also she kind of has a bridge to the old world of publishing and the more profitable side of it as well.
Right, and Jeff Sharp brings an interesting perspective because he's not necessarily from publishing. He's from the film industry. A number of his films have won, the top awards in the industry, Academy Awards and Golden Globes for Boys Don't Cry and You Can Count on Me and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And he has worked with Jane in the past at HarperCollins, where they were trying to develop jointly projects that would be books and film. But what's interesting, I think, about having Jeff on there is this is a man who is thoroughly steeped in media well beyond the printed page.
Absolutely, and I think that's kind of for me, it's the most exciting promise of all of this is the fact that you can start with these digital products, blending video, blending some audio elements into books, to not replace the spoken, the printed word, but to kind of augment it and bring these kind of special features and extra things for the readers that are really dedicated out there. Even in my own work here at Media Bistro, I do as much video work as I can, like interviewing authors and just doing very short pieces, because I do think at some point readers will be expecting a little bit more multimedia content with their books as we go more fully digital, and we have devices that can actually play video while reading. And I think this kind of multimedia product is going to be really fascinating. And so I'm really excited to see what he talks about in the future of this new book as well.
Right. And, you know, again, going back to the notion of Media Bistro's effort to reach authors and let them know how they can, you know, be successful in their own business, and writing is a business after all. What I recall from my own background is that I decided early on I wasn't just going to be a writer for newspapers. I was going to write for radio and television and very early days of web and so forth, because I felt that I needed to be ready to work for anybody. You know, when you're a freelancer, you eat what you kill. And so I really wanted to be able to say yes to any assignment, regardless of the form. And what's happening here, I think, with the kinds of people you're bringing to the eBook Summit is you're letting authors know what they need to be thinking about and how perhaps they want to shape their work to fit these new forms.
Oh, absolutely. And I have to stress, I was a freelancer up until about a month ago myself. I was working for Media Bistro fairly intensely for the last year, doing a lot of blogging and things for them. But then they brought me on for full-time for this position, which was a really exciting thing. But I completely understand what you're talking about, just that scramble of trying to know as many tools as you can have and bring with you in that toolkit, and just trying to make a living as a freelancer. It's not an easy life.
Yeah. No, it never gets easier. And as I say, you never want to be put in a position where you're saying no. There's another program that I think is apropos of that coming up later in the day on the 15th. It features Susan Danziger, who's the CEO of Daily Lit. You might tell people a bit about that, as well as some others who are sort of really at the forefront of e-publishing. It's called Cracks in the Pavement, the opportunities that digital publishing provides. And what's going to happen on that program?
Well, that program is going to actually be kind of looking at the people who are in the stage of creating this new content that we can use. Lexcycle is, they publish for the iPhone. They've created a reader where you can actually read books. They've got millions of people using it. Neilan Chotsky is the CEO of that company. They got bought by Amazon last year. I've been following them pretty closely. I actually read books with it on a fairly regular basis. I enjoy having a book with me on when I'm on the subway or something like that. I always have one in my, loaded into my iPhone if I need it. And so that's cool. Daily Lit's kind of the same thing. They do serialized books in digital form, so you can read it on your iPhone, you can read it on your computer, you can do it in all these different formats. But they're working with a serialized form, which is something we haven't seen really since the age of kind of pulp fiction or even Charles Dickens. Serialization's been kind of passé, but maybe digital will be the way to do it. And finally, the two other guys, Andy Hunter and Scott Lindenbaum, they're from Electric Literature, which is a literary journal that's using these new things. They actually only print on demand their journal. So print copies are only printed what they need. And at the same time, they have a variety of digital products that they offer. So if you want to read it on your iPhone, you can. If you want to read it in a printed form, you can order a print on demand. And so they're cutting back on the kind of excess of your traditional literary journal that prints a certain amount of copies every year. And they're being a little more flexible. And they're also able to pay their writers, which is something that's pretty rare right now. And they made headlines for paying $1,000 for each story they published, which is pretty rare these days. I think you'll know that as a freelancer as well.
Absolutely. You know, what did Dr. Johnson say? Only a fool ever wrote for any reason but for money. And you know, the dwindling ranks of those places that pay for writing is a sad part of what's been going on out there. But it's nice to hear that there are some who still think that that's an important thing to be doing. Finally, and to the point of money maybe, is a program that you're going to be the moderator for on the afternoon of the 16th. It's called Writer, Agent, Publisher, and got a couple of interesting panelists there. Steve Wasserman, who's now at the literary agency of Nerum and Williams, which is based in Boston. He was former editor at the LA Times Book Review, and you've also got another agent, Jason Allen Ashlock, who's with Movable Type Literary Group. What do you expect could come out of that conversation? Where are you going to try to drive that?
Well, I mean, like I said, we really try to focus and stay practical. I'm going to push every single time to say, well, can you give me a specific example for Jason Ashlock, for example? I want to know how his clients, how they're seeing contracts change, how their relationship with publishers are changing, how much publicity do they have to do by themselves now? The publishing world is a very downsized place right now. There's not as many resources to go around. We had a lot of layoffs last year. So the role of an agent's kind of evolving a little bit. You're going to have to do more work to support your writer, to make sure your writer's still working. And so with him, I'm going to try to really stay practical and just see, get examples of how it's working with his writers and how they're surviving in this brand new world that we're facing, and how digital books might change the way contracts are written and how much writers get paid for their work.
Agents and authors, I think, are going to be under a lot of pressure. You mentioned layoffs, cutbacks, this whole notion that we can squeeze as much out of authors as possible, getting them to do some of the things that the publishers traditionally did before. And I think there's probably going to be some pushback from the author side of things, because there's only so much time of the day.
Oh, absolutely, and it's such new days for this. I mean, that's what's kind of the most exciting thing about this conference is, I I'm very plugged into the publishing industry. I'm reading these stories every day, but I would be lying if I said I knew exactly what things were going to be like a year from now. It's going to be a very different landscape, and to talk to these people who are actually in the trenches, writing contracts, figuring out distribution lines, and or editing book reviews, as it were, for Steve Wasserman. Those people are kind of, they're in the trenches, and they can give you kind of the intelligence that you need. And I know it's hard to pay $375 for a ticket right now in this economy, but I'm pushing to have the most practical value for the people that are attending the conference.
Well, money well spent, and of course it is tax deductible, so it's a very appropriate business expense. We are chatting with Jason Boak, who is editor of Media Bistro Publishing, and he's part of the organization that is behind the upcoming ebook summit in New York City, December 15th and 16th. And Jason, what's interesting about the program, of course, as you say, is that it's very much tied to what's happening today, what's expected to happen tomorrow. And as we close out 2009, it's an opportunity to look back on the last 12 months and see some of the best and the worst in terms of news stories that you've covered at Gallicat and at Media Bistro. You've put together a short list on all of this. I would have to say, I don't know what Merriam-Webster thinks, but I would have to say the word of the year is Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you put this in order of importance, but your first on the list of best and worst is Twitter book deals, which almost sounds like military intelligence. Twitter books here? What are we talking about?
Well, it's been a really funny trend that's been happening in publishing, and I didn't put these in any order. It was just a fascinating thing. I mean, I spend a lot of time on Twitter every day. A lot of our readers really enjoy Twitter and communicate a lot on Twitter. We get a lot of traffic through Twitter, and it's kind of changed the way we have our conversation with our readers. So, naturally, I'm following a lot of these stories, and I've been able to report on it. I watched Soft Skull Press bought a book earlier this year from a writer who actually published his novel on Twitter, line by line. It was kind of a painstaking process. And
emphasis on pain there. My thumb hurt thinking about it.
Yeah. And so I interviewed him a little bit and kind of watched it all shape up. And within a few weeks, he had a book deal, which was pretty wild. And then some college kids got a book deal for writing Twitterature, which was kind of a Twitter look at famous works of literature. And just kind of watching all of this happen, interesting. It infuriated some of our readers, and some of them, it made them excited to see this new medium getting its day, as it were.
Yeah, no, I'll confess, very early on, and there are people who will remember, I was at a program at the New York Center for Independent Publishing back in April, and had one of your colleagues, Jeff Rivera, on the panel, and what I begged all of the panelists to do was not to bring up Twitter, because at that point, I felt like it was the pet rock of 2009. But I have come away from that position, and indeed we tweet on Beyond the Book, and like you, find it a terrific way to communicate, a way to pick up an audience that we wouldn't have been able to reach in the past, have a little bit of fun maybe, and to see things develop. And I think probably the attraction for publishers around tweeted novels or any kind of work, the other example that's very obvious is the fake AP style book that caught on like fire, and I believe has a book deal as well, is that you're able to validate for the publisher that there is, in fact, an audience for something.
Absolutely, and I think they found, like we did, that a lot of our readers were out there on Twitter, and I don't know, it's really interesting. David Pogue earlier this year actually collected tweets from his own readers and made a book out of them, so he kind of crowdsourced his work and built a book that way.
Well, that's a meta-tweet novel.
It's a meta-tweet novel, exactly, and it's just it's a fascinating kind of development. So we will. I think 2010 is going to be a big test year for Twitter. I mean, I think there's still time for it to be a pet rock type situation. I mean, if something better comes along or if something else catches people's attention, I think we could see that happen too.
Also on your list of best for the year is just the saga of the Twilight Saga and the way that that has really sold not only books but swept through the box office. Another book film duo here, of course, is the Dan Brown machine. A million books in a day or some crazy number that he sold there. That's a terrific brand he has developed, and every year needs somebody like him, doesn't it? I mean, the book publishing world, so many titles every year, more than ever, but as it stands right now, a few books are the ones that really prop up all the others.
No, I think there's a lot to be said for that. And at the National Book Awards a couple weeks ago, I went around and asked a lot of these finalists, and I was expecting kind of some snooty responses. I asked them all what they thought about the Twilight books and the success that these books have seen. I mean, she single-handedly propped up the publishing industry during the darkest period last spring. And early winter, she was selling a lot of books at a time when no one was buying books. And so I asked them all how they felt about her, and I was expecting some anger, I was expecting snooty responses, but every single writer almost told me, they said, well, anything that gets someone into a bookstore, and hopefully they're going to see my book next couple aisles down or something like that, but anything that gets people in bookstores right now is important. And so that's why I included it, even though not everyone likes Dan Brown and not everybody likes Stephanie Meyer. It's like both of those people are very important foundations of the publishing.
I think that's absolutely true. Also on your list here is something that really is fundamental to the eBook Summit, of course, and that is the record levels of adoption, the record sort of acceleration of adoption for eBooks, eBook readers, digital books, etc. But as you point out, it's been happening out there without a lot of numbers to go on. Of course, journalists like numbers, and Amazon notoriously is stingy with them, particularly around the Kindle, although they have come clean just recently.
Yeah. Oh, with how many Kindles they sold, they did give an odd figure. They said it was for every 100 books we sell in physical, we sell 48 Kindle books. And so it's hard to kind of measure that since they don't reveal their sales statistics, but that's still very impressive. I mean, I don't think anyone anticipated that they were selling, I mean, assuming they're telling the truth here, no one anticipated, I didn't at least, that they were selling 48 Kindle books for every 100 books. That's a lot.
I agree. And my suspicion would be that of the 100 books, the print books, there might be maybe not 100 different titles, but dozens of different titles. My guess is of the 48 units sold to the Kindle, that might represent only a handful of titles.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's totally true. And I think people are going for the bestsellers, the things that they don't want to keep on their bookshelves. I mean, that's how I look at digital books. The ones that I'm reading on my devices are books that I want to read quickly, and the pulp fiction novels that I pick up from the past. Those things that I read quickly, those are the ones that I'm looking at.
Well, and absolutely. It's kind of like potato chips or something else. You know, when you finish one bag, you just want to get another one. And I think that those kind of titles, the sort of pulp fiction titles, one is done and you just need another to kind of feed the fix. On your list of worst stories, there's some that are just sort of sad and we won't dwell on them. HarperCollins shutters Collins. It's sort of like I don't know, Abbott and Costello, you know, Abbott fires Costello there, but that was something that really struck deep, I think, to the business. You've got the hideous price war that's been going on at Walmart and Amazon that unfortunately is going to put plenty of scars on the backs of publishers all around the country.
Yeah. And that, I actually wanted to add a footnote to that I didn't put on the list when I gave it to you. It's a big problem. The e-books present a similar thing, and we're going to discuss this a lot at the conference, is the pricing for e-books is about $9.99 is kind of the standard price right now that people are expecting, and that's going to put a big toll on the publishing industry next year as there's more devices arriving. So it's a looming problem. I mean, the Walmart price war was on physical books, but it's going to also affect digital books very dramatically. We'll see that a lot more next year. Issue at the conference.
Certainly a story to watch, because I mean, there's just, even if the number of e-books, you know, the adoption is tremendous, if the margins are so razor thin, this isn't going to do a lot for keeping the lights on at publishing houses in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. On the list here is a story we've covered pretty closely at Copyright Clearance Center, the Google book settlement.
Yes,
it's an agreement that can't seem to agree on much. We've got the revisions just recently, and hope for the best, I suppose, if you're in the parties there going into court. But if I can, and we'll post this whole list on our site at beyondthebook.com, but the one that really struck me, and I'm afraid to ask you about it because it's bringing up somebody who probably is best left forgotten as a trivia question down the road, but Rod Blagojevich, he had a six-figure book deal and a book that was promised for delivery this fall. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, and it has not arrived. I mean, he had some legal problems with, or not legal problems, legislative problems. The legislature was trying to shut him down and keep him from profiting off of this whole scandal that he put himself through. And he just really had a blitz, a media blitz for a little while there. And I remember we first reported that someone had spotted him inside a publishing house, and then a few days later we heard that there were non-disclosure agreements being signed, and then we heard and. And when this deal finally broke, no one could believe that he would get a six-figure deal for kind of betraying the public's trust the way that he did. And it was just a low moment. A lot of people were very unhappy about it. We had to report on it, obviously, but it was a dark moment, I think.
Yeah, that's one of those things when you read about it, you wish that more editors had whatever it takes to say thanks, but no thanks, you know. But, of course, the fear always is that if they don't say yes, they're missing an opportunity that somebody else is going to scoop up.
Yeah, that was a big year for memoirs, too. I mean, we had Sarah Palin selling a lot of copies of her memoir recently.
And a lot of books that kind of... But, I mean, interesting thing about Sarah Palin, and again, you know, the business is thankful for anybody who can sell books. Not only has she sold her own books, but she's helped others sell books that, if you will, are parodies of her books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty wild. The Going Rouge kind of effect was pretty amazing. Some people were actually confused in bookstores.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that was a funny story, too.
Well, it's fun looking back on the year 2009. We've been doing that with Jason Boak, who is editor of Media Bistro Publishing and one of the organizers for the upcoming e-book summit that Media Bistro is putting on in New York City. I'm going to be there listening and hopefully finding out what's going to be happening in 2010 and beyond. Jason, look forward to meeting you there and to hearing from folks like Jane Friedman, Jeff Sharp, Jennifer Stenger, Susan Danzig, and so many more. We will link to the various places people can learn a lot more about this if they are in New York and can join us. We hope to see you there. Jason Boak, thank you very much indeed for being on Beyond the Book today. Jason, apart from being the editor of Media Bistro Publishing, he edits the Gallicap blog and hosts his own podcast from Media Bistro called The Morning Media Menu. We look forward to having you back sometime.
No, I really appreciate it today. I can talk about this stuff all day. I've had a lot of fun, and your comments were really good, too. It's been really interesting looking back at this year. It's a crazy, topsy-turvy year for publishing. I really appreciate
it. And indeed.
Well,
we'll be tweeting about it and God knows what else in the future. But thank you again, Jason, and to everyone in the Beyond the Book audience. Thank you very much for listening. This is Chris Keneally. Have a great day.
Be Beyond the Book is an educational presentation of the not-for-profit Copyright Clearance Center, with conferences and seminars featuring leading authors and editors, publishing analysts, and information technology specialists. Beyond the Book is the premier source for knowledge on the latest business issues facing today's dynamic publishing industry, from initial research to final publication and beyond.